What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
To yet another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. You got Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily and at amedlock1. We're going to kind of frame this show a little bit differently. As you know, the baseball season's over. The Astros are world champs, which is pretty cool, especially because of the Cardinal connections that they have. You want to aggravate a Astros fan, tell them they couldn't have done it without the Cardinals. But then that just opens up the whole hacking conversation, and you don't want that either, so you might want to just leave that alone. Anyway, so it's over. It's cool. And now we're really getting into that part where we've been talking, you know, since the last game in October, or even beforehand, about how this offseason is going to have to go. And now we're here to that off season. So I wrote a post on C70 It's About this week that kind of outlined the calendar that comes up and some of the things that the Cardinals will be doing when. And we're going to use that to kind of frame the first half of our show. We'll talk about some of the things that are related to each one of those deadlines at that point. And then, of course, in the second half, we'll do some more of the favorite Cardinal players. We've still got quite a list to go through, and so we'll try to do that. We hope you all have been enjoying what you've been hearing on that part, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But okay, Alan, let's just dive into it. First date on the calendar was November 2nd, which was the day after the World Series. That's when everybody could file to be a free agent, and unsurprisingly, everybody did. Lance Lynn, Zach Duke, Sungwon Oh, and Juan Nicasio all filed for free agency. We'll get to Lynn in a minute. We'll talk about that a little bit. And I don't know that Oh or Duke really warrant a whole lot of conversation. I think there's been some talk, and there was some talk beforehand about Juan Nicasio. You know, the Cardinals reached out to him. He said he was kind of interested in staying. But nothing came of that, and now he's a free agent. What do you make of that, or do you make anything out of that?
You know what? It's funny. I put on the Redbird Daily account, I had asked the question before Game 7 of the series. I said, after tonight, the 5-day waiting period kind of starts where they have to negotiate they can only negotiate with their team as far as contract goes. And I put a poll question down that said, do you think that he would sign? And it was basically 50-50 about the whole time, maybe about 60-40 to be honest with you. I kind of thought in the beginning that would probably happen, that they would pay over slot to keep him in, and that would be one of the bullpen arms that they brought in. The more you look at it, though, as well as he performed this season, I do think that there's probably a situation where they told him to, hey, go see what you can get elsewhere. We know what we can do for you. Come back. Let us have the last say. You know, kind of like a situation like done before, you and I had talked about, to where they may have had that conversation with Lynn. I doubt it was this week, and I doubt it was toward the end of the season, but it may have been in spring and maybe at the halfway point, and even at the meeting they had in Chicago where they kind of set the expectations about what they wanted with him right before the trade deadline. And that may have been one of those situations of, hey, we're not going to trade you, and we can't do set amount, but go out, see what you can get on the market, and come back to us. Let's see if we can work something out. I think that may have happened with Lynn some time ago. I think it may be currently happening with Nicasio. The longer this goes, though, it makes me think that Nicasio may be out the door as well. So, you know what? I'm just not really sure. That was one of the arms, just being the proven commodity that we've seen, that I was hoping they would bring back. And, you know, just from our show last week and from anybody that's listened to this, I'm not a big pay retail for a closer type guy, but I would like to throw arms at the issue, not to steal other lines, but, you know, I'd like to get into Nicasio. I'd like to look into a Morrow type deal, but he has some injury history, and Morrow may be one of those guys that is due for a letdown just because he threw so many innings in the series. Kind of a Chapman type situation. Chapman wasn't the same this year after pitching so much longer than everybody else. So yeah, that's the one interesting situation to me. I mean, Duke and O, we haven't even really heard their names much. You know, Lynn's going to be, we think we know where the Lynn situation is heading, and the Nicasio situation is still up in the air, but it may be, he may be out the door as well.
Yeah, and I we'll get to Lynn in a minute, although I will say I really don't know that they had any kind of conversations with him, because that seems to be the theme that you know, Lynn kind of said during the year, and so did some of the front offices, that they never engaged him at all on a discussion, which maybe suck. But on Nicasio, I just, you know, obviously you come into a new situation, you're going to say the right things of, yeah, I'd like to stay, and, you know, it'd be nice, this is a great place, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying that he didn't mean that, but you got to realize that, you know, the guy's 30 years old. He had a good year. He's had a, you know, fairly solid career outside of Colorado. He's had two or three good years. You just don't know what you're going to get. You'd rather get two or three, you know, teams bidding against each other, or you don't want to just settle before you even have a shot, unless you really, really like a place. And he was only here for, you know, 3 weeks. So it's hard to, you know, Mark McGwire may have fell in love with St. Louis that fast, but that doesn't happen all that often. And, I mean, you think about Matt Holliday, you know, they brought him in, and, you know, it was like January before he signed. He didn't sign anything soon or anything like that. So, you know,
That was one of my worst predictions ever, because I thought he was going to Boston. I didn't think he was staying in St. Louis the entire time.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, it was a little surprising. So I'm not ruling out Nicasio. It is possible. Like I said, you get another team, you get another two teams involved, they may go higher than they'd like to go with a guy like him, especially if they are going to spend money on a proven closer, which, like you said, it's not necessarily the smartest idea, it doesn't feel like, but it still seems to be like one of the things they're talking about too. So, you know, if they're going to spend the money there, they may not want to go much over what they already had an idea of on Nicasio. And if he's got another team coming after him, that deal might go up. So I'm not saying he's gone at all. And I can understand why he didn't sign early. Even though some of us thought so, and he could have, but If he had been worse in Pittsburgh, you know, maybe he would have gone ahead, figuring he couldn't get, you know, wouldn't be draw a lot of interest on the market. But, you know, obviously he's got some, and so I can't imagine that why he wouldn't go.
Exactly, and being on the north side of 30, if I were looking in his eyes, this is his but one big payday.
Yeah.
So he probably will try to maximize this out.
Yeah, I mean, you can't fault him for that. So, and again, that could be St. Louis. I mean, he may get out there and there's not anybody else that's gonna, you know, give him the whole package of money and atmosphere and winning possibilities that he was looking for, assuming that's all he's looking for. You know, he may come back. We'll see. I don't know. I don't think there's anything ominous about the fact that he filed for free agency and didn't already sign.
I think we agree that will be the one area of intrigue in those four names is Nicasio.
He's about the only one that will return. Okay, so the next deadline, like I said, that's already passed. The next deadline is Monday, when teams have to extend their qualifying offer by that time. I didn't write it in the post, but the players have a week till the 13th to either accept or reject. Cardinals, obviously, again, the qualifying offer is $17.4 million. The only one of those free agents they're going to extend one to, and they've already said they would, is Lance Lynn, who's also already said he's going to reject it. Not a surprise on either side of things. You know, again, the Cardinals probably would have liked to seen Lance Lynn accept that offer, because I think it feels like, I don't know, we've talked about this a different time, but I don't think the money's the issue with Lance Lynn. I think it's the years that he wants. You know, they've got enough arms coming up. Even with Wainwright sliding out of the rotation here in a year or two, you know, I think that, you know, they've got enough spots that, you know, we saw it this year. You know, where are you going to put everybody, especially if they're doing well? And, you know, getting a Lance Lynn who, let's be honest, I mean, you know, you've got the Tommy John in there, but there were some declines, you know, and some issues that, that people looked at this year. You know, he's a middle of the rotation guy. Might be, I think sometimes he's been a two, but I don't know that he's going to be a two going forward. Is that the kind of guy you want blocking, you know, a young prospect? You know, I don't know. But, you know, obviously he wasn't going to accept the qualifying offer, and I don't think he's going to settle for a two-year deal either.
No, absolutely not. And it was funny. I don't know if you checked MLB Trade Rumors this week. They had their top 50 free agents, and, and they threw the numbers out. Well, they put him down in Texas at 4 years for $56 million. Yeah. I would almost be willing to bet that St. Louis would pay for $56 million over 3 years for him. You know what I mean? One of those things. I don't think the market will be that low, but to me, that seemed pretty low. You know, 18 may be high for a three, but you're right. He's probably borderline on that two and three, and there's a lot of certainty with the perceived number two that we think they're going to have in Wainwright. So I thought that was pretty interesting, but I still think that was a little bit low. I think that was set really low, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think that he probably won't reach that 90 to 100 that we assumed, but I think it'll be significantly more than 56.
Yeah, 56 over four is, what, $14 million. I mean, that does feel a little – I mean, again, I think Lance Lynn may be a little bit overrated. I mean, you know, you look at some of the peripherals, you know, his ERA is sometimes better than the rest of his numbers are. But he's still going to give you, you know, he even coming off of Tommy John surgery, he gave you 33 starts. He went basically six innings a start. You know, he had a couple of bad, he had some bad outings, but he had a lot of good outings too, to keep you in ball games. And that's worth, I think that's worth more than $14 million. You know, obviously at one time
You know what, in kind of comparison, if I'm not mistaken, I think Jaime made $12 million last year.
Yeah.
And his last year as a Cardinal. I believe he did.
Yeah, he did, but that contract was a little bit low, too. I mean, because that was the end of a deal, you know. You sign him when the guy didn't have a whole lot of control. You bought out a year or two. The option year was, I think it was 12. It was right about that. So, yeah, I would, you know, I don't know that you could compare the two just because of how the market is. But, yeah, you're right. It just, that seems awful low. I know we wanted the Jordan Zimmermann deal of 5 years, $100 million, and that seemed reasonable. But, you know, I think there's going to come a time, and it may already be coming, where those mid-range starters are just going to get squeezed. That they're going to, you know, a team's going to say, well, if you're not a number one or a number two that I'm paying a whole lot of money for, I've got talented guys in my minors that I need that could be the 3, 4, 5. You know, why do I need to pay you to, you know, to be the middle of the rotation? There's value there, and there's innings, and there's reliability. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's possible that, you know, that at least gives the ownership a little bit of a stronger hand, and so they are able to drive the price down. But, yeah, I don't see that. I think a 4-year deal seems reasonable, but you got to look more like 70, 80 million, I would think. You know, I'm no good at picking out contract numbers, but that feels to me like that'd be a little bit closer to what he's going to see.
Yeah, that was my first thought. Whenever I was like, "Whoa, that seems awfully low," I go, "If that was a 3-year deal, and that's you're looking at 18, that may be something the Cardinals would consider." But I don't, I don't know. That just seemed year and number seemed a little bit low on both sides. Yep. I think that you're probably right. I think you're looking at the 70 to 80 range.
Okay. Also on Monday, people have to be re-added to the 40 man. They get rid of the 60 man DL over the winter, so they have to go back to the 40 man. Because, in case you don't know, if a person's on 60-day DL, they don't take up a 40-man roster spot. Most of you know that, but just in case you didn't. And so they have to go back, which means they have to have room for them. And you know, you got the four free agents coming off. So it's not going to be a huge deal. It's Alex Reyes and Trevor Rosenthal that have to go back added onto the 40-man. And we'll talk a little bit more about Rosenthal here in a little bit. I want to wait until we get to the deadline on the keeping people. But you know, Reyes gets batted back in. That shouldn't be an issue. We could see a little bit of roster move this weekend, you know, just to make sure. But it feels like that's going to probably wait a little bit.
Yeah, it's building up to be pretty interesting. When Gersh was on with Bernie this week, I thought it was pretty funny because I thought his interview was really good. And he didn't give away any information, and he made it clear. He was like, well, we know what we're going to do in these certain situations. We just can't, you know, I can't announce it on here. One of those things where they kind of laugh back and forth. But really good information. And then on, you know, one day later, Mozeliak was on with Cusmano, and it was one that didn't air. It aired that night. I think it was in news, but on the radio, he put it on his Twitter account, and then on the radio the next day, mm-hmm. he went over it. And Mo released some of that information, kind of let it leak out that they probably weren't going to re-up Rosenthal and weren't going to offer the qualifying offer to Lynn, but that's not going to go anywhere, and they didn't expect it to, and they just don't feel like that's a fit at this time in how we worded it. It was funny, within like a 24-hour period, you know, some more things had leaked after he said that they couldn't on Wednesday, and then it actually on, you know, yesterday or today, it was a little bit more with on the Brian Stoltz show, Mosey like had let a little more slip out. But it all points to that Rosenthal situation on the 40-man. And where it seems like, and they even kind of said it, that there's probably not going to be a contract tendered, which probably means he's pitched his last pitch as a Cardinal.
Yeah, and like I said, we'll get into that here in a minute, because there's a step before that may matter. I mean, because they could add Trevor to the 40-man on Monday and have no problem. And they may not, but they could do that without really causing any issues. November 13th to 16th, which is a week from Monday through a week from Thursday. The general managers meetings in Orlando. Now, these are not the typical winter meetings that we know of in December, but these are when the general managers do all get together and they go over some rules. They, you know, they talk about what's coming up next, blah, blah, blah. But, of course, anytime you get all the general managers together, they get to talking. As you pointed out, Mo said also this week that, you know, there easily could be in the next week or two, and that would be in line with these meetings, some sort of two-for-one or multiple-player deal to help clean up the 40-man roster, because as we'll get to, there's some decisions to be made there. You know, we've talked a lot, you know, about them doing a quick strike type of move. You know, I don't think that Mo's saying the big one's coming then, although it still could. You know, this could be a Grichuk and somebody else for something. Or it could be even a Grichuk for a minor leaguer that doesn't have to be protected. I mean, you could see stuff like that, although that's not really what he was saying. But it does sound like, you know, and I think if Mo's saying something like that, they got to be pretty close on one.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's... Just checking Twitter for over the last couple of days, I think there's already a little bit of a lack of patience in what things are going to happen. I, for one, think that they've said too much at this point to not do anything. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that the reason they've let that leak out is they're close on some things. And now, and you're right, it may not be massive. And a lot of these moves that we're talking about may not be the ones that are earth-shattering. But I put the faith in the fact that they can improve this team. I believe that they can improve it in the way that they want to improve it. And I hope that makes sense. So you're right. It could be really interesting. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of ground covered at the GM meetings. And that's probably where a lot of the smoke will begin.
Yeah, I think that you'll see the rumors start coming out and things like that. But, Yeah, it just yeah. I think they'll make. Like I said, I don't know that the big trade, the impact bat, whatever, will happen. I mean, you know, 2-for-1 deal could be. You know, even though Mo has said that he's not looking at adding on a starter right now, I mean, it could be Grichuk and Bader for, you know, a number two starter. I mean, that would be unlikely, I think, but that's the kind of move you're making where you clear up two, you know, you free up a 40-man spot while still helping out a position that you've got. So, yeah, I think this is when, and again, that's just a week from, and you know, if people are impatient, you know, 2 days after the World Series, this is going to be a long off season. you know, but yeah. But like you said, they've said a lot, but not only have they said a lot, they have 2 years of missing the playoffs. They have two basically non-existent trade deadlines after talking about, you know, trying to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
You had an off season last year that, you know, I had some with Dexter Fowler especially, but it still didn't necessarily add up to what, you know, people really kind of thought maybe. And so the reservoirs, that, I mean, it's just not there. There's not a whole lot of trust right now. And I think that, you know, that wellspring is dried up, you know, for giving them a benefit of the doubt. And so if they, you know, speak as big as they have now about getting an impact bat, about getting a, you know, closer, about getting a starter and all this other stuff that they're talking about, they've got to do it. Because, you know, and like you said, you know, Mo and Gersh out on a PR tour this week. And I told you, people are going to, you know, this is when they're getting season ticket renewals back in. And they, you know, they want to make sure these season ticket renewals come in, because we've heard that's the basis. They've got the biggest, I think they said the biggest season ticket holder base, maybe in baseball, one of the biggest. And it was what was it, like 25,000 season ticket holders, something like that?
I remember taking notes when we were going over all that.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was funny. It didn't surprise me at first that they said that they were the highest in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, man, that's a lot. I mean, especially when you consider, you know, Boston, which I know you have limited seating, but then you think about New York in L.A. But I was like, you know what, that's probably right. I mean, it's they've got it. We know they're up there, but I thought that was pretty interesting. And I thought you had a good point on that today when we were talking about it. It's funny how they put this PR tour on, because one of them was on the radio every day this week,
yeah.
And or starting Wednesday, whenever they could, basically after the series, they were on every day this week. And you were right. I mean, it's it's the sales pitch, and I don't think they're telling us what they want to hear. I don't think they're that kind of organization, but I do think they want to get their information out. I thought you were right on that.
Yeah, and again, I mean, they've got to have that base in there, because it used to be that they budgeted for 3 million fans, and now they really budget for 3.4, and that's really where they're at. You know, they were at 3.4 or something this year. It was a little under 3.5, and they were down a little bit. They can't afford for that, you know, especially that season ticket holder base, to get too low, because, you know, then they try to make it, you know, all of a sudden it's 3.2 and 3.1, and that's still a lot of people. But when you're, you know, planning for 3.4, it makes a difference. So I do think that they've kind of realized that they've kind of got stuck. I mean, we've talked about attendance over the last couple of years. You know, I don't know as much last year, but, you know, 2 years ago, you know, we talked about, you know, September games that were not being sold out, and probably had a little bit of that this year too. So I think that they realize they've got to do something. And again, sometimes that backfires. I mean, you know, when you feel like you have to do something, doesn't mean it's the smartest move, but they can't go this off season without, you know, they can't do a reclaim project and say, you know, this guy was good 3 years ago and we think we can make him better. No, you've got to get somebody that was good now. You know, if they fall apart, that's one that, you know, if they've gone out and got a Jason Hayward and Jason Hayward was like he was in Chicago, so be it. You know, unfortunately, I think right now the fans need an effort of good faith And if it backfires, it backfires. But you got to do something first.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's and it, the stars align right now for several of those factors to happen. You know, that's why I have quite a bit of faith that there's going to be some monumental type trades. I think it'll be multiplayer, and or there's going to be it's either going to be multiplayer or like 2, 3, maybe 4 deals that get done to improve. So, you know, I have a lot of faith. Like I said, my optimism may be a little too high on that just because of the, being burned in the past. But, you know, I have faith in the guys that I think that they'll, they know where to improve and how they'll do it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm glad they're out and about, and it, you know, shortens the off season when it picks up early.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely helps. All right, next date is November 20th. That will be, 2 weeks from Monday. And that is when the 40-man roster has to be set for the Rule 5 draft, which means, doesn't mean your 40-man has to be set, but it does mean that anybody that's going to be protected has to be on there. And that's, you know, Austin Gomber, Tyler O'Neill, Oscar Mercado. Those are the main ones. I think there may be a couple more. And so that means that the Cardinals have to make room for these guys. And this is going to probably tie in. The next one is December 1st, which is the non-tender deadline. These two things may work together, especially for the Cardinals this year, depending on the trade activity they do. But it seems very likely that they'll make their 40-man roster spots by not tendering some people. And the biggest one right now, like you kind of talked about a little bit earlier, is Trevor Rosenthal. Obviously should be out for most of next year. We saw Zach Duke return when he had his surgery early. And a reliever could come back a little faster. So you might be able to see Rosenthal by August of next year, maybe late July, depending on how his rehab goes. But it's asking a lot, and you're also got to assume that he's going to be effective when he comes out of it. Trevor Rosenthal's a free agent at the end of next year. So, you know, that does seem to line up as a possible, very strong non-tender contract, even before the fact that Mo, you know, like you said, basically came out and said today, that's where they're looking at. You know, they could sign him to a new deal that, you know, paid him for rehabbing and then, you know, gave him another year on the end of it so they could get something out of it. But, you know, they've been burned by some reliever contracts in the past, and it maybe they just decided it's best to cut bait here.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I this is one that I did think they may do that fluff contract of bringing him back for a couple of years, but that just doesn't seem like it's in the plans. And that this may go into, I hate saying it, when they need a reliever of his ability. And you're right, it would be way deep second half before he could contribute if he were to come back. But you know, I saw somewhere where you know it could save them upwards of $8 million. You know, to move on, and that will probably need to be allocated somewhere. I think a lot of the signs that they're not necessarily looking for a start somebody in the rotation may be more allocation of funds for, you know, other areas of improvement. So this could be an easy one. Unfortunately for Rosenthal, it just runs up at the worst time contract wise for him. A, they can't, you know, they're not going to pay $6.5 million or whatever it's going to be he's going to get in arbitration if they offered it to him, or a contract of 2 years that's only going to pay for 1 year. You know, so the luck is kind of bad on both sides, but I agree with the move, just letting him walk.
Yeah, I think so. I think Rosenthal may come around and be a very good benefit for somebody else, but, you know, right now it's just a situation where I think you probably have to not only because of the money, but I think there's I think they're maybe playing it pretty tight on the 40-man again. And you may just need that spot, unfortunately. So,
yeah.
Are there other people that you think, you know, I think Greg Garcia is a guy that could get non-tendered as well, because, you know, I think that they've got some guys that could do what Garcia does and probably do it a little bit cheaper. Not that Garcia costs a whole lot of money, but I'm kind of wondering if that's not one place that they try to save a little spot too.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, that's and we've said it from the beginning. It's just not necessarily us they were talking about shifting the culture a little bit and kind of shaking some things up. And, you know, that there may be quite a bit of turnover, and that would seem like an easy place to do it.
Yeah. I mean, he's not arbitration eligible this year. Actually, I guess he's not eligible till – I'm not sure if he's eligible at the, in the, after the 19 season or I guess he probably would be eligible after the 19 season. So he's got a ways off. So it may be that, you know, the cheapness and control, they're worth keeping him. But it would seem to be that he's a possibility as well. You're right, shaking up things and making it significantly different. After that, like you said, December 1st is a non-tender deadline, which I figure, like we're saying, probably most of that stuff is going to be done in November, although, you know, it may be that if they make some moves in there between the 20th and the 1st, that somebody else might get non-tender, depending on what that is. December 10th to 14th is the winter meetings. And that, you know, a lot of times the Cardinals don't do much in the winter meetings because they've gotten all their stuff done beforehand. It feels like, you know, they this year may be the same way. They may be going in and trying to find that relief, that, you know, innings eater starter, but other than that, they may have most of their stuff done by that time.
I agree. I think that it's going to be pretty quick. I almost expect this month to be the busiest one for them, but I do think that you will they'll be activity. They'll do something to the winter meetings, but I also think they're going to they'll maybe even wait until March to do some more bullpen stuff and maybe even add a starter. One thing on Garcia, I'm going to backtrack. He doesn't have any options left.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that would probably be a pretty big factor into that as well. So, but yeah, I agree with that. I think they're going to be really heavy active early. I think they're going to try to get a lot of the shopping done quickly, but I think it's going to go all year. I think that there is going to be significant turnover, and I think that you'll probably see something in the winter meetings, and it's always exciting when you do. Mm-hmm. And then I think that you'll probably see a Kyle Loesch type deal in around the start of spring training as well.
It may be. I don't know if they'll be able to go that long without getting that innings eater. I guess it depends on who's out there and things of that nature.
I think a lot of it depends on Reyes.
Yeah, and that may be true.
Because if they're happy with what happens with him in December and in January, which I have a strong feeling they're going to be incredibly happy with him by some of the things that they've already said. Now, if there's not any setbacks or anything like that, I think they feel like they're pretty covered. I almost expect there to be 7-8 starters this year just because of the innings limit they'll probably put on Flaherty. One, they'll obviously put on Reyes, and that limit may even happen in the first part of the season. But with that being said, I think they will probably, depending on what they trade, will be looking for somebody on that, you know, that late side, and they do pretty well on those kind of moves.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true because I mean, you get in there and you've got a rotation of Martinez and Wainwright and Reyes, probably Luke Weaver, and then Michael Walker. So, I mean, they don't move him to the bullpen, which they have not indicated that they would be that, even though we have talked about it. You got five guys there that you plan on being there, so yeah, signing a veteran guy for depth or a guy that maybe can start in Memphis and be ready to go, or a guy that could go in the bullpen and swingman type. Of course, you're asking for Mike Matheny to be able to manage all that. Although maybe you're not. Maybe you're looking at Mike Maddox to do all that, and maybe it's making us feel a little better. So. Yeah, it's a possibility. I don't know. You know, again, they've said they're looking for a starter, but it's kind of farther down than the reliever and the bat. So I guess it just kind of depends. We saw, you know, the market get a little tighter tonight because Tanaka from the Yankees is going back to the Yankees when he could have opted out. So that's one less big arm that's out there. Not that the Cardinals would have been playing in that market, but that somebody else might have been, in which case would have left them open for somebody different. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And then after that, you know, it gets quiet. With Christmas and New Year's, really little going on. The 1st of January is pretty quiet too. So you've got January 13th to 15th is the winter warm-up. You know, moves are pretty much done by the end. We get a chance to see the new guys. We get to a chance to really gotta get excited. And then February 13th, pitchers and catchers report. And we get started all over again. So, you know, it's hard to believe. You know, we're sitting here, and there's still a long ways to go. Obviously, we just started the off season, but you start looking at that, and it's like, well, that February 13th might be here before we know it.
No, I agree. I thought it was so refreshing whenever I actually read your post first, whenever the spring training schedule came out. Because I love that starting into February, since you're starting early, late March, you know, instead of April. I was like, but you know, that's not a whole heck of a long way off. You know, to me, the baseball season starts after the first of the year anyway. You know, you get into it and you're just like, okay, now you're into 18, now you're kind of starting. And within a month, you're going to see the guys reporting, and even unofficially, you see the guys down there and all that good stuff. And that's usually where it picks up. So this year, it's not going to be as long as we think, and I really think that it's going to be an active one for St. Louis, and it's going to give us good talking points the whole time.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll like I said, it'll slow down around the holidays, and we'll be off some of that too. But
sure.
You know, that's going to be the slow time. But yeah, you know, like I said, it'll zip past that, and all of a sudden we'll be ready to go again.
At that point, around the holidays, you know, the two of us and all of the Cardinals fans and the organization may need a break.
Yeah.
You know, they may be pretty dang busy for about 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's very possible that we might not know. We'll just have to see. Well, if we get a breakneck run through here through the winter meetings, then we have to try to sit down and figure out what they actually have, if they do enough stuff.
Well, one more point about some of the things that had happened media-wise this week, and I know that I didn't kind of prep you for it. You know, Cusumano kind of leaked it out on the radio today that Fowler has been approached about moving positions. And I thought that was interesting, because then I kind of think that, I don't know, the counterpoint's going to be, well, it'll naturally be Pham. But then that makes me wonder if center field is in place that they may be looking. I mean, that I honestly think that they're looking at any bat that could be available, and they'll move defensively around said position. You know, that's kind of how I think it'll probably go. But I did think that was pretty interesting, because if you would have asked me, and even last week I think I may have said something, I thought he would be the center fielder until he just proved that he definitely couldn't.
Right.
And I thought that at least bought him a year, his injuries at least bought him a year. But I did think that was interesting when that was reported today.
Yeah, and we'll see, you know, how much there is to it, or if it matters, and maybe they talked to him and he said, I really don't want to, and they said, okay, we won't do it.
Or he's in another organization, you know what I mean? That may be part of it too. I don't think so, and I hope that's not the case, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mo pointed out at the end of the year press conference, the only thing he committed to was a whole lot of money. He didn't necessarily commit to him being a center fielder that whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being said, he came planning to be a center fielder. It's kind of a...
Yeah, the selling point, you're right. The selling point wasn't, hey, ultimately you're going to hit second or third, and by the way, we're probably going to move you if you're terrible next year. You know, you know that. Obviously, that's exaggerating, but I'm just saying that's, you know, that wasn't part of the selling point either.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that is pretty interesting. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see if, you know, if they don't make a move, or if they make a move that doesn't really affect center field, if he still moves, you know, are they asking him this so they can shift Tommy Pham to center field?
Yeah, exactly.
I
wondered that myself.
If he did not respond well, does that free them up to trade Tommy Pham? You know, I don't know. That is an interesting thing. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that affects them or what they do. But I would still bet on him being a center fielder, at least opening day.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the one warning you can maybe throw out to Cardinals fans is don't fall in love with too many guys right now, because anybody could really go at this point, you know, move out. I mean, I think they have laser focus right now to improve. And if they see improvement and it's going to cost one of the favorites, I think that could probably happen. think you can probably circle a list of four or five that probably that are likely not to go, but I still wouldn't be surprised if one of them do.
Yeah, I mean, Yachty's not going and Adam Wainwright's not going, but other than that, I mean, probably not.
I would be willing. Reyes is another one that I think that they do think highly enough that I think that, that will probably be one. But other than that, I think that you're probably looking at – I think Fowler may even be fourth on that list, but I think all bets are off.
Yeah, and they're not – I think Reyes also right now, yeah, he'd still bring something, but you got to figure his value is a little bit lower since he hasn't played. In a year, and then while people are probably trying to buy low at some degree, so I don't think the Cardinals would do that. You know, we'll see, I guess, but I agree. I don't think he's going anywhere either, but we will see. Was there anything else?
Nothing that wouldn't take us 2 hours. So yeah, we've got a lot of off season to cover, so we can hold on to some of them. There was a Baseball America report today about the outfielders, and I would suggest you guys go read that. That was very interesting about how they kind of valued some of the guys. Kyle and I talked about it off of the air about how they kind of positioned the wealth of the outfield and how the pecking order that they put down was kind of interesting in some of the things they said. And that's, not being the expert, I probably can't get into it and do it justice. So I would say go read it and see what you think.
Yeah. It is kind of, they almost kind of positioned it as if you want an outfielder, you're going to talk to the Cardinals this offseason.
Mm-hmm. They did. And they covered kind of like every type of outfielder that you may want. I thought it's exactly what I thought it was when I read the article.
Yeah. So I think that was, it was pretty interesting. And yeah, I think they have to. I mean, it's just so deep, you know, from Double A on up, that they've just got to clear some of that stuff out. And again, I know I've said this in the past. I've said, oh, Mo's got to clear out starting pitching, or he's got to clear out this or that, or he's got to trade Matt Adams or whatever like that. And he hasn't done it, at least not at the time when we're talking about it. I hate to say he's got to do this, but it really feels like he's got to move at least one or two outfielders to have any idea. You know, it's just getting clogged up. All right, well, if we got nothing else, let's go ahead and shift over to the favorite Cardinals. We'll go back to that. Again, if you haven't listened to the last two shows, we have been doing this. Adam, Allen, and I put this out earlier in the year, got your opinions, rated them. And now we're going through the list. We have gone through everybody that earned 10 points or less over the last 2 weeks. So we will start now with the people that have 11 points. And that would be Matt Adams, Stubby Clapp, Whitey Herzog, Scott Spezio, Jeff Suppan, Steve Swisher, and Bill White. Alan, who you want to talk about first?
I feel like White probably – I wish I could do Bill White more justice. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about him, but I had heard that he can play. Herzog's the interesting one for me on there. I know that we didn't have – there was no – we covered it last week that it didn't necessarily have to be player. But, you know, the Herzog era, and mainly because, you know, I'm a kid from that era, and I know there's a bunch of the guys that listen and read our stuff are in the same way. That carries a lot of weight. That was a great brand of baseball, and I know that, you know, I think there's some guys that would like to see that kind of back, and I'm not so certain that would work, but it was really fun to kind of see something different and to kind of field your team and to manage with the ballpark in mind. You know, with the fast turf and the size, and, you know, obviously it worked. You know, 3 World Series appearances, 1 championship, worked very well. Spezio is, he's an interesting one because I thought he was a spark plug on that team in 06. I thought that, you know, him kind of falling apart in 2007, their pitching was terrible, and they probably wouldn't have done anything with it anyway, but I thought him kind of going off the rails really hurt them. Suppan, you know, huge starts in the playoffs. It was kind of embarrassing when they brought him back and he just wasn't the same type of player. You know, Matt Adams, big homer. Stubby Clapp, I think a lot of people would like to see him in the, you know, director's chair at Bush, but I don't know if that would happen. But yeah, they do promote from within, and then of course Nick Swisher's dad to kind of wrap that up. So, an interesting list. And that's, there's been, of some of the lists that we've had so far, I felt like the talent was superior, but I think this one may be the most interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I was always, and I always still am a fan of Matt Adams, and I'm still not sure he ever got the full, you know, break that he needed. But, you know, if he's got to figure out how to hit lefties, he hit them in the minors. He'll hit them occasionally.
That's exactly
but,
where I was getting ready to go with that.
You know,
that's what I was getting ready to say.
Yeah, I mean, he did some. And he's hit them occasionally. Obviously, you know, Clayton Kershaw knows he can hit them occasionally in the major leagues, but it's that consistency that he needs. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him because they're not moving Freeman off of first again. So it feels like Matt Adams may be on the move this offseason as well. You know, yeah, obviously Whitey Herzog has that cachet. Bill White, I mean, you're right. A guy coming before our time, guys that some of the people like Scott and Bob Netherton can talk about. I know Bill White more than anything as what National League president back when I was growing up. But he obviously, you know, and a doctor to boot, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
So, amazingly well-rounded person, not just a player. So, and yeah, Scott Spezio, though, we're always going to remember that triple in 06 that you know, got him that win and got him into the playoffs. That's about that and the red beard, I think, are the only things I really remember.
He played a lot of different positions. He's one of those guys that I like, though, because he's a guy he can play everywhere. I love the switch hitter. You know, it's, I mean, you know, he won two World Series. He won one in California as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And good, decent player.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's just, you know, had trouble in his personal life.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know what he's done lately, but, you know, obviously he got out of baseball because of some issues, some substance issues, and I think he's.
You know, it's funny because, yeah, you always. There's that stigma with any ball player, you know, of stuff, but it's funny. I don't know. I have the DVD collection of the World Series and playoff games from 06.
Right.
And they're fantastic. And they have the the post game celebration, and the guys are running in and beating everybody else, and it's really funny. You can hear this as clear as day. You hear Chris Carpenter run in the clubhouse and go, "Keep the tequila away from Spezio." He says that, you can hear it plain as day whenever he walks in the clubhouse. It's really funny.
Oh man, probably a good idea too. So. All right, number our 12 pointers. There's a smaller list. Bobby Bonds, Alamedes Diaz, AJ Brzezinski, and Placido Polanco.
Oh, what a weird list.
Yeah, Placido Polanco is always one of the fun ones to say, if nothing else. Of course, I remember him being part of the Scott Rolla trade, and a guy I've always wanted to see. I always thought the Cardinals might try to get back. I mean, it's a guy, you know, kind of like some of the ones that we've seen maybe at a smaller level of the Garcias, the Jerko, whatever, that could play a lot of positions and, you know, did a pretty good job of holding his own when he did.
Got a funny story about Polanco, and you may know this. They did try to bring him back. Have you ever heard this story at all?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm trying to look at the years because I can't remember if it was Jocketty or if it was Mo when this happened. When did he... It would have been 05, so it still would have been Jocketty.
Yep.
Well, he was free agent. And let me check, double check on that. I can't remember if he was traded to Detroit before this happened and then re-signed with Detroit. I can't remember, and I can't. Let's see. Signed as free Phillies. Maybe it was after the trade. I can't remember, but it was before the end of his career. I'll tell you what. It was between – he did two stints with the Phillies is what happened.
Yeah.
Well, he was free, and it was before – as a matter of fact, it was before 05 because I heard this story during the World Series. In 05, whenever he was a free agent that year, before he signed in Detroit, the Cardinals had reached out to him about bringing him back. And I guess that they were close to a deal, and it just went silent. And nothing had ever happened, and he ends up signing with Detroit. Well, I'm almost positive it was Mosalak that did this for Jocketty, but I think Jocketty was in charge at the time. They went down and approached Polanco about this, and he was like, hey, man, I thought we had this deal done. We thought you were coming back. He goes, well, that's not what I was told. I was told that you guys pulled the deal off the table. Polanco basically said it, and they were like, no, we thought you were coming. He goes and fires his agent because he wanted to come back and didn't go and end up going to Detroit.
Huh.
Yeah.
That is a weird thing.
Because if you remember, that was – I remember that we all assumed that that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of died. And next thing you know, he signed in Detroit. And whenever I heard that story during the World Series, I said, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I mean, I'm surprised. I also didn't realize how late he had played. He played all the way to 2013.
He's always one of those guys, and you're right. I always do want to see back regardless of – I didn't realize. I mean, he was an all-star and a gold glove in 11.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty impressive. I had to double-check to make sure Bobby Bonds played as a Cardinal because I didn't – I mean, obviously, you know Bobby Bonds as Barry Bonds' dad, but I always think of Bonds as – you know, he's out in San Francisco as well and things of that nature. But he did play a year in St. Louis, so – it was interesting enough to see. Anything else on those guys, or are we going to move on?
Let's just move on since we got plenty to cover. I mean, okay. Diaz is—he's a fun guy to cover, but
actually, maybe this would be the place we should have talked about this earlier. I didn't read the article; I just saw the headline. But I saw that Alan Diaz was talking about expecting to be a regular next year, and. I get that you've got to have that mindset and you've got to have that, but there's just no way he's a regular next year, is there?
No, and you know what? I didn't take it the article like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the headline, but it was more of a, hey, I want to contribute in any way possible. I'll play the outfield if I need to. How it was worded is he wanted to be an everyday guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't take it like that. Now, I think he's so well-spoken and everything, and I give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe more than I should, not knowing him any better. But yeah, I didn't take it from the article like that. You have unrealistic expectations. I did take it of, well, he has to say that, but I even thought that it was more of a, hey, I want to be involved with a big club type deal.
Okay. Like I said, I never got around to reading the article, so I just saw that, but I thought it kind of struck me interestingly enough. All right.
You weren't the only one, because I know there was a lot of fire spit after that headline came out.
Also, imagine that. All right, our 13s, we can talk about a mixed bag, too. Will Clark, Hector Cruz, Pete Cosma, and Milt Thompson. Got to give a shout-out to Pete Cosma and Tara Welbin, who's the vice president of the Pete Cosma fan club. And Pete, you know, he's still bouncing around in the minor leagues of the Yankees, I think. That Will Clark, though, I mean, I still remember that trade in 2000 when they brought him over. Of course, Jocketty did a lot of trades right there at the deadline in 2000. You know, McGuire was hurt, and I think, yeah, pretty sure it's 2000. And, you know, Clark just came in and just, you know, was that guy that you remembered from the mid-80s that was, he just picked up and just, you know, what he hit, like, you know, hit a home run in his first game with the Cardinals, and it was just an amazing run for, you know, 2 months, and then he retired and went home.
Oh, yeah, and it's funny, I guess I've heard his side of the story, too, that I guess the people were beating down the door to get him to come back and play for a year or two more, and he was like, nope, I'm done, finished on a high note and walked out. I guess he would crush about a 12-pack after every game in the clubhouse. Rob Brains even talked about that this week. And, you know, I know at one point he cursed so bad at the field that you had to have – there was an age limit at Candlestick to set, you know, in the vicinity of him of first base. He was a rough guy.
Yeah, he could be. But he had a 1.081 OPS in the 51 games.
Yeah.
12 homers, 42 RBI. I mean, talk about a guy. I mean, you're trying to fill in for Mark McGuire, who's, you know, obviously hurting, but, you know, still just right off of those – 70 and 65 home run seasons, and not only did so, but may have done it even better than what McGuire could have done in that stretch. It was incredible to watch, and, you know, it kind of erased some of those bad feelings from when he was a Giant and beating up on Ozzie. So.
Yep, exactly. That's a good baseball fight, by the way.
Yeah, pretty good. All right. Our 14s. We have Glenn Brummer, Tom Bernanski, Jim Linderman, Alex Reyes, Mark Whitten, and Todd Zeal. Where you want to go?
Hey, how much do you remember of Linderman?
Not much. That's right. I mean, I remember him because it's 87 is right around the time I was starting to pay attention.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've read some since then that he was a big prospect that came up, but, you know, it's always, you know, for me, it always just this, you know, middling outfielder that never really, you know, amounted to much. I remember some small cards of him and stuff, but that's about it.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of those that just never fulfilled promise, but boy, he came highly touted. I remember thinking that he was going to be that 30, 40 home run guy. You know, he came up like that. But I was a big Jack Clark fan, so I liked when Clark played, but he was injured quite a bit.
Yeah.
He was the bopper in the middle of the lineup. He was always one of my favorites on that team. Now that whole team was a lot of my favorites as a kid, but I remember Lindemann being involved, and you know what? He's had a majority of the starts in the World Series with Clark being injured in 87, but I remember them trying to find positions for him to play, and it was almost like a Trumbo type deal. Yeah, that they could never find a position for him, and then he didn't hit enough to warrant moving guys around, and just kind of unfulfilled, you know, just the prospects that they kind of flame out. So he reminds me a lot. I mean, we have to talk about Whitten, I guess, after the four home run deal. Was kind of in those lowly days.
Yeah, I think Whitten and Brummer both just point out, one, it's the Cardinal baseball, although I think all fan bases probably can attach to players like this too, but it's just the nature of baseball where that one game, if you have the one game at the right time, you're legendary. I mean, like I said, Mark Whitten hit four home runs, and again, that was a season that nothing was going on. It was 93. I graduated from high school, was in college, I think, at the time, because it was a September game. You know, Brummer, a backup catcher, who stole home in a game in 82 while they were making a run.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if that doesn't happen, nobody remembers Glenn Brummer. You know, I don't think. You know, if Mark Whitten doesn't hit four home runs, a lot of people would forget that he was on the Cardinals. Just that one game can make a difference and make you, you know, you still see Brummer at the ballpark sometimes. Just, you can be legendary just for one game.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. Very true. You know, the Bernanski deal, I couldn't stand him in that 87 series just because a lot of the Twins were actually probably likable guys, but it was just being a fan in the sixth grade, I just couldn't stand him. So you talk about a knife to the heart when they traded her for him.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that was upsetting when I was a kid. I remember that. And then
Because her's your guy, right?
What's that?
I said, her's your guy, right? I mean, isn't that your
top
guy?
Oh, yeah. And so that was brutal. I'll never forget, we were at the lake whenever my mom told me that, I don't know, I guess they heard it on the radio or however it was, but they told me, and I mean, there were some tears. Because that was the breaking up of some of the Aussie teams. You know, some of the Herzog teams. You just knew, you know, things just weren't the same after that. You know, 88, the Mets, during that year, the year of the trade, the Mets were just so good. And then, you know, this Cincinnati was really good after that. Right. And I don't know. Things falling apart. But I can't even see Bernanski's name without thinking of cards, avatar. Sure. You know what I mean? Yeah, or his profile picture. I don't know. It's funny.
This is true. As for Zeal, I remember him coming up. In fact, it's interesting. One of the few things I have, Arkansas Travelers scorecard from when he was playing, and it's autographed by him and by Jeff Fusaro. So it's interesting to have, you know, two guys that turned out to be major leaguers on the same scorecard. But, you know, I remember Zeal coming up. He was coming up at the same time Ken Griffey Jr. was coming up, you know, just time-wise. And so, obviously, he got overshadowed, but Zeal had a really solid career. I mean, the guy that started behind the plate and then moved to third base under Joe Torre, and And then just kind of, you know, kind of a journeyman for somewhat. I mean, he kind of hit a lot of different teams, but was a solid player and a guy that, you can't ask for them more than that. I mean, what?
Well, speaking of those Arkansas days, I remember when he was the prospect that he was, and he would pack out Driller Stadium, the visitor side of Driller Stadium, because everybody thought he was the next, you know, there's a ton of Cardinals fans here. I remember when he came through, I mean, everybody was clamoring for that autograph. And I'll always remember Zeal, always an approachable guy. But, yeah, he was a catcher. And I remember there were a lot of catcher smiths from kids at the ballpark, you know, thinking that he was the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah, played for 16 years. You know, can't argue with that at all. Let's see. Made about $41 million in his career. So he did better than I did. So, not good. All right. Well, let's do our 15s, and we'll call it an evening. And there's only two of those. In fact, you may have more to say about these two guys than I do, because they're both right there in those 80s times. Leon Durham, who got a first place vote from someone. I think that might have been a trolling one too, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they really liked Leon Durham. It was an interesting first place vote, and the first person that we've had on this list to get a first place vote. And then Dane Org is the other player. Like I said, both those guys kind of before my time much. I mean, before I was really paying attention. But, you know, obviously I know their names. Obviously, Leon Durham, I think more of as a Cub and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And I think of Dane Org as a Royal. I didn't, you know. I think
So. Well, the funny thing about Durham is, you know, Durham had a really good rookie season in St. Louis. I am almost positive he, I'm going to look it up real quick, but I think he was only here a year. Or in St. Louis. Yeah, that's right. He was in St. Louis a year and went to Chicago. Now, what's funny about Durham to me is, yes, I remember him as a Cub, and I see that, you know, he was a Silver Slugger, two-time All-Star, you know, had a great season in 83. You talk about somebody that's overshadowed by one play. His error in 84 against the Padres is the only thing that's ever shown Leon Durham, who was a very quality player. You know, that has always – that's the only thing that's ever seen him. I remember – I could name a lot of that Cubs team, unfortunately, just because of the WGN factor. You know, they went Jody Davis, Durham, Sandberg, Dunston, and then their third base at the time was a revolving door of – but yeah, I remember a lot of those teams, and I always hated him for that reason, but I did know that he had come from St. Louis. But yeah, I just that error in 84 just overshadows so much of everything he's done.
Well, and it's fascinating, and I've only heard reference to it once or twice, and so you may know the story, and I just now pulled it up to read it about more of it. But, you know, Leon Durham has a, you know, a Gatorade dumped on his glove before that fifth game, and whether that had anything to do with it, you know, because it says the glove got heavy and sticky, but he says it didn't. He wasn't blaming it on that. He thought it was dried out and stuff. Cause I didn't realize when I heard the reference, I thought it had happened like right before the ninth inning or whatever, whenever that error came, seventh inning, I guess. But it obviously happened before the game, so it seems unlikely, didn't it? But still, it's one of those, you know, curses that seem to be all over the place with Chicago until last year. Hopefully they can come up with a whole new set of curses over the next 100 years. That's what I'm hoping, at least. So.
Yeah, well, it's a good start. So, yeah, it's funny. You are – I've always had to have – trouble with his name, George.
Oh,
you know, I've always had trouble saying that. Yeah. So I remember he and his brother really well. I was looking it over, and yeah, I remember him as a Royal more just because of my age of remembering. But you know, he did win a ring in '82 with that team, and I was just looking, and I knew he was a utility guy. But man, he played five different positions for the Cards that year, and they had a lot of revolving parts like that. You know, if you think about that roster in 82. So, interesting player.
Yeah. No, let's see. Okay, no, he was the... Yeah, he was the one that drove in the game-winning run in this game six I was thinking he was the guy that was rammed, that was George Horta. So he was the one that drove in the run. So yeah, it's interesting. I just a name I knew, but yeah. I actually just pulled up his Wikipedia page. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of him until just now. So that just
I remember he and his brother from the baseball cards.
Yeah,
I remember the images pretty well, and Durham for the most part. But yeah, you know, my rooting interest, the heaviest years started about 85. I was probably about 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
And that's when I remember, because I remember the 85 series more than anything. I remember some of 84 just because of Kirk Gibson, with his bomb for Milwaukee. I remember some of the early 80s, but I was young. You know, we're looking at 5, 6 years old.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I can't remember many of those.
I
heard all those stories from Grant Paul and stuff like that. But
I remember watching the end of 84. Because earlier that year, we had actually gone to Detroit. I had relatives up there and gone to a ball game and seen the Tigers. So then, you know, watching them win the title that same year. And I have memories of 85. 87 is the first one I can remember actually seeing on TV. And then, I picked it up about that time. So, some of these names, except know the names, don't have an intimate connection to it. We have gone through the first, let's see, what is that, 94 players over these 3 weeks. We're just getting started. Going forward, we should have a little bit more variety of at least point totals and not have so many long lists. And we'll start to get into some names that maybe more people are connected to, as obviously they showed that in the voting, but we will get to 16 and on, however far that goes, next week when Alan and I come back at you. We'll be on next week and the week after. Probably won't do Thanksgiving weekend. Probably be too full from eating to talk about the Cardinals, but hopefully over the next couple of weeks we'll have plenty to talk about. Like we said, we've gone through the schedule. And it feels like the Cardinals are going to really do some work over the next couple weeks to at least, you know, change up the 40-man roster a little bit. So we'll be here for that. You can check out the blogs. We'll be writing on things as they happen. My blog, the Exit Interviews, where we look at each player, start Monday for a day. So you can kind of revisit what these players did, both positively and negatively. Over at the Redbird Daily, they've got their top 100 Cardinals still going strong. Alan, where are y'all up to? I think I remember seeing 81 to 85, maybe?
Yes, we did. Austin covered that this week. I started the week off with the 90 to 85 mark, and then it had gone down from there. It was funny. I didn't say too much last week, but I had J.D. Drew on our list, and I had J.D. Drew on the Redbird Daily list. And I actually took some of the things that we had talked about off that to put it down on Drew. And I feel – I don't want the spotlight to be put on this. I feel like I'm pretty heavy on him. And I had a buddy of mine text me, and he goes, "Hey, I really love the list." He goes, "But the Drew – Drew – J.D. Drew knocked Oklahoma out of the College World Series. He had 3 home runs to do it. And it was really – I've got a friend who is a diehard Oklahoma fan, OU fan, but has always been a Drew fan even after that. And he didn't take any issue with what I said, but I felt like I kind of pulled off before I could have got really heavy on J.D. Drew, and I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, probably good not to do that. So, Alrighty, well, like I said, we'll be back at you next week, hopefully with plenty to talk about. And until then, I'm Daniel, and that's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Sooner from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!